If you get confused, just go back to the main idea. We're dealing with the reciprocity between ego and self. And the way it seems now is that the idea of the self has made an impression on him, but he's going back and forth about what that all means. Which is not untypical for the way it works when we meet the self in our inner journey. It is generally a crisis. Ultimately, it's seen as a positive saving event, but when it first appears, it doesn't feel that way. And then what he goes into the last two paragraphs on the right column of 285 is suddenly he is in charge of the self. I've caught him. He who has been feared since time immemorial, I have made him small, etc., etc. But that's certainly somebody who doesn't know what the self is.
I thought that was interesting, the paragraph above that, he says, you touch the God and he hides terrified in the egg.
Right.
And he hides terrified in the egg. Huh.
Yeah, that's what happened with him in Istvar, huh?
I don't understand how he touched the God. I mean, I'm being too literal, I'm sure.
Well, I think the idea is, if you want to use a different language, which might be helpful, you could say the self is potential.
Okay.
And making the self conscious means making that potential real.
Okay.
And when you make the potential real, it is never what you thought it would be. You think you're going to write a great book. You write an average book. The realization of the self is often accompanied by disappointment. And I think that fact of the potential becoming real diminishes it, diminishes the potential. And I think that's what he's driving at here.
And that's laming.
That's laming the self.
Here I think he's so betwixt in between.
Right.
Because the God image, the new God image for him has not shown up yet. And so he's just in that place where nothing is happening.
And he doesn't know what is involved with this thing yet. And I think you can see he's a little bit influenced by European thought here, which is God is dead. And he thinks the solution is to integrate God. But he's going to find out you don't integrate God. God integrates you.
So why would he be terrified?
Doesn't want to lose the fantasy that comes with, I could be a great writer.
No. Here it says, you touch the God, and he hides terrified in the egg.
But he would be, as I understand it, your feeling of greatness that can be. Think of cocky adolescents. You know, they're going to get into the company, they're going to rise, they're going to make a lot of money. You know, realize at 50 they're going to be fired because they're being replaced by younger people. So the realization of the reality of entering life hasn't hit yet. And what that reality is you're not going to get everything you want. So it's a diminishment. Facing reality is a diminishment.
This lames the ego or lames the self?
Well, it lames the self, but it's experienced as my disappointment.
I'm not getting this at all.
Oh, well.
I hear you, what you're saying, but it just isn't my experience, and that's why I'm having trouble.
Oh.
I can't connect.
Are you saying that when you accomplish what the self has asked you to accomplish,
mm-hmm.
that your ego feels it as a diminishment of what you thought it could be in this life. And that somehow I haven't lived up to what I could have been, or haven't.
Right.
Was different than what I thought I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
I thought it was a diminishment of God.
But you experience it as a diminishment of the ego. Don't think about ego self. Think about experience. And before you did something, your experience was you were going to be great at it. When you are finished, you realize it was just one more book.
Is that what Jung experienced at the end of his life? You were talking about that somewhere. that he felt like he hadn't done enough or something.
Probably.
That wasn't meaningful.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, he's written 20 books and he hasn't done enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
It's tricky because in the pre-state, you feel big, but you haven't done anything.
Right.
In the post-state, you have done something, but you feel small. And that feeling is symbolized by the self. You are feeling the self in its potential state when you're big. You're feeling the self in its diminished state when you're feeling small.
And could you put quotations around diminished, because really,
right,
it is more like a real life state.
Right.
Than the self.
Exactly, because in fact you have become something, but compared to what you thought you'd be, you're less than, but that less than is a hell of a lot more than you were before, to begin with. Yeah.
So is that first state of stage American?
Yeah, or inflation.
Or inflation.
Yeah. Necessary, but it will go through a process of change. And that's what he's dealing with here, that process of change, which he hasn't understood yet.
And in that feeling that the ego gets of, I don't know, my grief.
Yeah.
That is part of the ego being integrated into the self.
Yes.
And really an acceptance of your humanness.
Exactly. Exactly.
Greatness or grandeur that I once had.
Yeah. And that's going to be what he deals with in the opening of the egg. How there are so many, I mean, if you look at it under a psychological microscope, there are so many things going on in us when we become real. And there are paradoxical phases in that, one of which is inflation. And ironically, to become real, you've got to go through a period of inflation. I don't know if you have to, but often that's part of the process.
Well, and too, I think in the Western culture, it's always, you know, there's the bias of you got to do something about it.
Yeah.
Instead of how am I going to be about it, and that in the it's also an accomplishment. But we don't look at it that way. We look at it as, well, I didn't do something about it, so I didn't do enough. When really the self is asking us how we're going to be about this. Of course, maybe we've changed our attitude about it.
And I'd add, not only is it about doing, it's about getting recognized for doing. So the more you are recognized, the better you are likely to feel about yourself in the unconscious position. I mean, look at Jung. Jung was king of the heap in the psychoanalytic world, really in Zurich, until he split with Freud. And then he lost all his friends, and his work has always been marginalized. Had he stayed with that early point of view, we'd be meeting in a university. So, I mean, that might be an example, too, where the real thing loses glamour. And with the world so addicted to glamour, you feel like a loser when you do the real thing.
the real thing is seem like PPFF.
Yeah. And yeah, the real thing is, we're told, is PPFF.
Just think about what might have become of it. How many psychology might have changed by being part of academia.
Yeah. It will be trash by now. Power, prestige, fame, and fortune. Nothing to do with pee-pee, Carl.
Sorry, we've used it so much.
It's a phrase, it's an acronym of Von Franz. PPFF. You know, when these French classes I've been taking, the kids I've met who are really capable of doing something besides driving a big car and, you know, being a cheerleader, they all feel inferior. They feel there's something wrong with them. Because they're not part of the PPFF general attitude. I mean, I was over there for Friday. It was home, beginning of homecoming, and all these people come back in their big cars, and you know, like, and these kids that are really sharp and caring and insightful and able, I think, in time to commit, they're just feeling like dirt. I mean, they're the ones that are wearing blue jeans and sandals and T-shirts, you know.
So it makes you think about the Wall Street occupiers. You know, I mean, maybe they're really. Maybe they're the ones that really have the right, or, you know, the more realistic.
Oh, I think they do.
Attitude. I mean, you know, by pointing out this.
Absolutely. I'm totally for them. I'm also for Mr. WikiLeaks too. Yeah. And if you hear the interviews of the Wall Street administrators, they're school teachers, nurses. I mean, they're not a bunch of long-haired hippies. You know, they're just. One woman was a nurse, she said. One woman was a school teacher. Our school is closed. What am I going to do? I got kids. Who cares about me? It's really, that is the shadow of PPFF. Wall Street is PPFF. And other people suffering under it. Really, of all the things that have been happening, that gives me hope.
Yeah.
Okay, so more of what I would call arrogance. I've caught him. Next to the last big paragraph, that is the demise of the gods. Man puts them in his pocket. Ha ha ha. Wait, Jung. That is the end of the story of the gods. See, he's sounding like Freud here, and he's sounding like Sartre, and he's sounding like Nietzsche and Camus.
Right.
That we just get rid of God. Or God is something that we can understand and then move beyond.
And then I suppose, on the other hand, could you say, these are part of the feelings one would have when you come to the point in your civilization where the God image has to transform because it no longer fulfills the conscious need.
Also true.
So there'd be a real conflict in that feeling.
Yeah.
Especially if instinctively you believe in a transcendent aspect to reality.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, too, remember, we're looking at this on several levels. This is a typical phase in coming to consciousness of the self.
Even without the idea of a transformation of God at that time?
Because you suddenly, you stumble on what you can be, and you act as if it's what you are. And maybe you have to act as if it's what you are to actually make it be what you are. But then comes a disillusion that, oh, you know, I'm not the world's greatest scientist or banker or whatever.
There's such a difference between the previous, the incantations, you know,
mm-hmm.
adoration of the thing and doing everything for this, and now the question is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's that monster appears.
The diminishment of the potential that's in that egg, old and overripe. The gods have fallen and been buried in an egg as if that's nothing. But that egg has the potential to burst forth into something new, and I think at this point he's kind of struggling with remembering that.
Mm-hmm.
You almost wonder if he isn't sort of purposely expanding a certain position here, as though he knows the arrogance involved in a certain level, and he identifies with it, but he's also sort of say, okay, this is where I'm at right now. And you know, not quite tongue-in-cheek, but just, you know, a little sense of I guess I can't help but attribute a little bit of consciousness to him in that sense.
Flushing it out.
Just saying, okay, here's where I'm at now. I'm saying, you know, I got God in my pocket. Okay. Well, let's see where we go from here. Because it makes a big deal.
Because you have to get out and work that state of that.
I got to state my position. Sort of almost like making a rhetorical point.
And maybe that's really important to do to get you out of being servant to the old idea.
Yeah. He's committing himself to a certain point, and maybe taking responsibility for that. He has that arrogance within him. And so he's making a stronger case for it than he even needs to do, because he's taking the responsibility for it.
That makes sense, because if you are going to be a mediator, reform in those ways, you have to give voice to both sides first before you can find the middle way.
And then he's going to flip over the whole thing.
Well, I remember a guy I was working with years ago when I first moved here. You wouldn't know, he's not even from around here. He was a Mennonite and finally kicked that hard. I mean, they got a lot of nice qualities, but it's very shrinking, repressive. And the first thing he did was go out and buy himself a Porsche. And then he wrecked it. Almost killed him. Around a mountain. Turn. He spun out, hit the guardrail, and bounced back and forth between the guardrail and the side of the mountain. Lucky he got out alive. But, I mean, that inflation came immediately after this, what I've been taught for all the, you know, don't do this, don't buy, don't have sex, don't. And when that was gone, this huge inflation came. And then came, we were either work on the two sides. That smashing the Porsche was kind of dangerous, and that's not good, and neither was all the injunction you've heard. So this, I think this is typical for the process of working with the self, particularly when you've been raised in a religious tradition and you can't stomach it anymore, and you'd like to be an atheist, but you can't, because something you knows all aspects of God are not false. And Jung, you know, was a PK. He was a preacher's kid, so.
And as we studied in the Nietzsche class, when God is dead, where does God go? Into the individual. And so there is an inflation that comes at that stage. Hopefully you move through it past yourself.
Right. Okay, so that continues over the top of 286. I don't know if there's anything new in that first two paragraphs.
I think it showed a new attitude.
Okay, go ahead.
The egg, and he says, I want to love my God.
Okay.
And hopeless one, I want to care for him like a child.
Yeah.
To me, it shows a new attitude, even though before he's talked about being mother and father to it.
Yeah.
You see how now he feels a responsibility to nurture this new thing. This
potential. It's like there's a flip.
How quickly he flips back and forth. Those of you who did the Zarathustra will see this. And that's the nature of the unconscious. It says these utterly contradictory things within a couple of sentences. Now we got to sit back and say, now, where do I stand vis-a-vis these two opposites? And I think then that's what comes up, beginning with the... do we miss any? No.
We just missed the historiatism.
Did we? Gosh. Is there anything in that?
Looks like the I. The letter.
Which one is that? That's however, yeah. That's in 62, I believe, huh?
Yeah. Historiate initials. 62.
Yeah. I don't know. Do we need to go into that?
No, it just reminds me of that tree that's coming up. Well, I got
him. Okay.
Mm-hmm. when they say HI in the text, HI 62, that stands for historiated initial, which are those decorated letters.
Okay. Like, I mean, you know, Celtic manuscripts, I think that's where it comes from.
So in a way on this, when he flips over to love, you know, I suppose you could say, you could look at it two ways maybe. He reminds himself of love to keep away that death dragon. Or you could look at the other way and say, he looks at love to facilitate the death, to make it a good death. This death of God.
Well, I think what we're going to see is everything we've discussed earlier, is it this, is it this, is it this, is it this, is they're all going to come up with components in this next section. And that's why this next section is so complicated, because it's made up of about 10 different contradictions. But contradictions are the nature of the self. And this, you know, this business of that, that diminishment is at the same time empowerment. So really, you have to be a poet, not a scientist, to understand the self. Which is why Jung uses symbols, not logic. But just to finish that section, I think in the italics, you can see the return of respect. Grow in the egg of the east. Nourish yourself from my love. And then suddenly we have a radiant God before. We only had a pocket trinket. And also, I think, very important, what follows ethical. Remember on the previous page, he said, I admire the powerful. Here, he says, what does power avail us? So he's back and forth.
Well, because he had ended that italicized earlier, if you do not need your power, but love.
Right.
Love, not the power. The Yahweh, right? The Yahweh aspect.
Right. But I think there's two ways you can go here. One, he's reevaluating power. Siegfried snuck in the last page. And now he's saying, ah. But the other thing I think, too, there are types of power. There's an ego power and a self power. Ego power wants recognition, wants possession and dominance. The self has a power about it, which is the ability to produce change, I'm going to say, for the good of the whole. I think you could say the Wall Street demonstrations are a manifestation of the self. It is not, look at me, it is we have problems to solve. So he hasn't realized there are two types of power.
Well, he's kind of experienced, you know, the Siegfried and then Stephen, like a totally different power.
Right.
Correct.
The power to continue life. That is it.
Yeah.
The life-affirming power.
Right.
What he's talking about here.
Right.
And that's the power that you're speaking of.
Yeah.
Yourself.
And I think those of you who have been raised in a well, not even conservative. I was raised in a moderate religious tradition, not terribly conservative. But this idea of giving up pride, giving up strength for God, that it's like the powerless state is idealized. And so that we think by giving this stuff up, we are spiritually evolving, and conversely, if we are prideful and if we do have power, there's something wrong. We're not spiritual enough. And the point isn't to give up ego power through powerlessness, but to shift ego power to self power. Ego power is dominant and demanding and always has to be recognized, where when you're in touch with the self, the work you do will make a difference. And you must be able to fight for it. So also he's really reevaluating the Christian idea of power. And I think he's coming to it, but it hasn't quite sunk in yet. We do not want to rule, we want to live, but life itself is a kind of power. We want light and warmth, and hence we need yours. Just as the greening the earth and every living body needs the sun. So greening the earth and living bodies are power. That's the power of life. A sunless spirit becomes, I love the sentence, a sunless spirit becomes the parasite of the body. But the God feeds the spirit. Does that make sense to you? A sunless spirit becomes the parasite of the body.
Can you say another one?
Well, that was my question to you guys.
Where are you?
For the last sentence, right before the opening of the egg.
Okay.
I mean, we've all been around people who give energy and warmth, and you feel energized afterwards. And you've also been around people who, afterwards, you feel drained.
Yeah.
That somehow the spirit has been taken from you, and to me that's kind of the, you could say power, but it's energy, or it's energy giving, or it's
mm-hmm.
energy taking. And in leadership classes, you know, it was power versus, you know, influence.
You could say, I like the word potency.
Or potency.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I would say from the spirit parasite of the body, that the body reacts psychologically and physiologically
yes.
to that sort of thing.
Right.
So that becomes manifest.
Right, right. Right. Yep, definitely. Yep. We have it.
So
yep.
We say that the sun that is now going to appear out of the egg, is this sun? It's the sun that greens the earth and every living body. So the warmth and light of the self, is it without error?
Yeah. I think one of the problems is he uses these damn words in different ways. Doing it right now, what's the sun here? I think it's just what you said. It is lucidity. It is life-affirming understanding.
But that's not the sun that comes out of this little egg, right?
Yeah, I think it is.
Oh, I didn't think so. Because he says, if Devar is only sun, and then what are we if we're only sun? And he goes on and on.
Well, again, try to put yourself back into the process. At the moment when that sun shines compared to what was, it is life affirming. As he develops further, he's going to see the limit of that sun and begin fine tuning much of what he's just seen as positive. Before you can evaluate this, you always have to ask, at what point in the process of coming to consciousness are we talking about? And what can be a value at one point later is a problem.
So it appears that right away he sees that he says that God suffers. Well, this is just the next page when the darkness isn't there.
Yes. Well, now it's going to get complicated. No sooner does he make that statement than he contradicts it.
Which statement?
About the that as if the redeemed condition is sunlight.
Well, God itself announces that it's sun. It's completely sun.
And then he's going to question all of that. Let's say let's take an addiction, alcohol, say. When the alcoholic can stop drinking and see how the pattern of their life has led to drinking, that's like sunlight. If you are an alcoholic and you can get to that point, then that is an enormous accomplishment. And you feel you've reached the goal of growth. But if you're then in the sunlight only, pretty soon you start getting bored.
Yes, and that's what he sees.
And, yeah,
but the way he sees that.
Right, but what I'm trying to say is how the sun can seem like everything. Because it's the insight that frees you. And then later,
yes, exactly.
You realize, well, it's freed me, but it's left me kind of one-sided.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
He seems to see that pretty quickly.
Yeah, he sees that pretty quickly, yeah.
So the way the sun is like illumination.
Right, yeah. And a particular type of illumination. And just as illumination represents growth, so illumination itself can grow. The type of illumination we have can transform.
Well, you know, if the old God image has lost its ability to shine, basically the sunless God, because we've now seen the dark side of it, the shadow side of it. When the new image bursts forth, will we see the shadow side of it at first?
Not at first, no.
So it would be all sun to us.
Yeah.
And as time goes on and we become more insightful, hopefully, then we can see the shadow aspects of that new God image.
Which brings me to my next point. So we're now moving on to the opening of the egg.
We haven't looked at those images.
Oh, well, let's do that then. And then I'll tell you my brilliant point.
Oh, well, don't keep going. Don't.
Well, no, I think the images are important. That's image 63.
Mm-hmm. The egg and the, looks like the parts of the horn down there in the roots.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Does it remind anyone else of the tree of the
Sephiroth? Mm-hmm. Except I think the Sephiroth has 10, doesn't it?
Yes.
And this is 12.
Right. Did you notice each of the little scenes of the transformation of Istvar are the fruits of the tree?
No. You want to explain?
Yeah. Say that again.
Okay. All right. There's image 50. There's 52.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
There's 54. There's 56, 57, 58, 59, 60.
Oh, yeah, there's
61. And there's 55, 53, 57.
Huh.
Wow.
Very good.
So he's got them all, hung on the tree, like it's the tree of his spiritual evolution, and those are like the fruits.
You don't refer to the different incantations, too, right?
Yep.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
This is his prayer tree.
Yeah.
This is the synthesis. This is the beginning of the synthesis of all of that.
Yeah.
Still incubating the egg, though, because that's
how
it works.
Go ahead. So start with image which one? Let's see. So how does it go? There's 50. Where is 51? What is 51? Is that just a...
Yeah.
Is it a historiated initiative?
No, 51 is I am the holy animal that stood astonished.
Yeah. What's the image?
You can go back if you want.
I'm just looking for it. 51. Oh, it's the one where the path goes through two aspects of the feminine. The snake and the dove. And the man is sitting on top, crowned as the holy animal.
That's over there on the...
Which one is that?
Isn't that over there 51? On the far right?
Well, let's see.
51? Which one? Over on this side, the bottom one.
This one?
Mm-hmm.
I have that as 50. Oh, yes, I shouldn't have said 57. It's 51. I misread my own writing. That's right.
Okay.
So then it will be 50, 51, 52, 53, 54, 55. And then 56, 57, 58, 59, 60, 61. Right. Thank you. But I noticed that the tree of the Sephiroth has the god on top. His tree has the god on the bottom.
Oh.
The roots.
I don't know that word.
It's from the mystical arm of Judaism. Is that the right way to say it, Mary?
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of their mystical philosophy, and it's in the Kabbalah, the mystical text.
How do you spell it?
Sephiroth.
Your idea is that the god has 10 emanations, which they depict on a tree.
Yeah, and that's how God reveals itself.
Yeah.
That's how the god reveals itself, through those emanations.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so I suppose for Jung, this is the way his new god image is revealing itself.
Mm-hmm.
Those are its emanations.
Yeah, it must be. He must consciously be responding to the Kabbalah, I would think, here.
You would think, because it's very, very similar.
He knows enough of that now, too.
Uh-huh.
Well, at the bottom, the egg also looks like it's still in a boat. Like the boat.
Mm-hmm. Still in those horns or
you
whatever.
Their horns.
I don't know.
It looks like the horns.
Mm-hmm. That was very clever. The way he made those seams into.
I would have never
thought
of it.
You didn't notice?
No.
I didn't notice right away.
No, I didn't notice.
Yeah, very clever.
We got one more. You want to look see at that picture? That's 63.
That's
and
63.
Here's 64.
Bam, bam. Oh. Yikes.
Do you want to say something here, Carol?
Well, he entitles this Satapatha Brahmana, which is a 224, which is a reference to a chapter of one of the sacred books of the East. And in that book, Prajapati, who presides over procreation and is a protector of life, he's a creator god, he produces Agni, the fire god.
Oh, okay.
And Agni needs food, and there's no other food around than Prajapati himself. So Prajapati is afraid that Agni is going to eat him, so he makes an offering of milk.
Hmm.
Milk. Butter and milk, which are both milk. Prajapati emphasizes. So Prajapati performs, and that offering of milk is called the Agnihotra, which is in our footnote 133 on that page. And so this verse shows the justification, they call it, behind the Agnihotra, that sacrifice. So the god is making a sacrifice to save itself.
Hmm.
I don't know what that means, but
Well, if we translate it into our metaphor, that we have to realize the self so it doesn't get lost. But realizing it is a sacrifice of the self. I always think of this idea that before you do something, it's going to seem bigger than after you've done it.
Now, say that again, Gary. We must realize the self so it doesn't get lost.
Yeah. But in doing so, it's a diminishment.
A diminishment of the self?
Yeah. Which we feel as a diminishment of ourselves.
Oh, of ourselves.
You know, when I finished at the Heart of Matter, which I worked my ass off on, I had a dream that's person came up to me and went, ho hum. Walked on. Yeah. Could you at least say thank you?
Good job, but what's next?
Yeah, exactly. It could care less.
Yeah.
So it's a disappointment. Or you might equate it to postpartum depression, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There you go.
That might be a good analogy. All this work, and I got this little shitting, pissing thing to deal with.
And it's only just starting. It's worse.
Now, in Hinduism, for that egg, that Hiranyagarbha, Brahma, the creator god, either emerges from that egg or is the egg itself. In another context, Shiva creates Hiranyagarbha, which embodies aspects of him. And then the Hindu saint Krishnananda talks about the Hiranyagarbha. He says, internal to the waking consciousness and pervading it, there is a subtler function of this very same consciousness, which is subjectively known as the dream consciousness, or Taijasa, and cosmically called Hiranyagarbha, or the all-pervading subtle consciousness in which the scaffolding of the universe is built and patterned. Now, synchronistically, I just saw a science program on dark matter. And the way they describe dark matter is that it is the scaffolding of the universe. And in physics, they speak of dark matter that way. Now, reality or regular matter is organized by this scaffolding, this dark matter, and it gives galaxies their shape. And, you know, of course, galaxies are that mandala. So, in effect, this dark matter, if you want to get into the mythology of physics, creates the mandala itself. And in Hindu philosophy, it is that scaffolding also, you know.
What is dark matter?
They don't know.
Oh.
But without it, the universe wouldn't exist the way it is. Because it gives the universe its structure.
Is it a certain type of particle?
They don't know.
They don't know.
What makes them think it exists?
Well, they... Okay, I'm going to have to get into it here. Let's see. Good thing I looked at my notes. So they looked back at the makeup. You know, they can look back in time when they take the Hubble and they look back. They looked back in time and they saw that with visible matter, and they ran, if you only took into account the matter that's visible, and you run a program that starts with the Big Bang and makes that matter do what it does, the universe doesn't form because there's not enough mass to make the galaxies. But you add dark matter, whatever that may be, and then the universe forms through the computer simulation just as it is today. And that's how they know that there's a mass there,
which we don't understand.
Which we don't know what it is, you know, and we don't know, because dark matter is not affected by light, so they can't see it, and it doesn't behave like ordinary matter. either, although it affects matter by its gravity.
It's got gravity.
Yeah, that's right.
And does it still exist, or did it only exist at the beginning of the universe?
Well, it has to still exist, or they couldn't account for the fact that the universe is still expanding.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to theorize dark matter and dark energy, to which they know even less about. Otherwise, the universe wouldn't work the way we see it working. So that's how they theorized dark matter and dark energy.
I have two comments to make. One is the floor in there looks like a checkerboard, like a structure. And you're talking about the structure of the universe with the squares. And then you painted a picture once before I was in this group that Mary Springer showed to me. And it looked like a woman's body and also like a desert landscape. And then there was this like a kind of a grid that was coming down out of the sky.
Oh, yeah, the matrix.
That sounds like what you're saying. Well, there's the structure.
Yeah, well, I suppose that the Hindus talk about Hiranyagarbha being, it manifests forms contained within itself. And that's how we speak about Sophia, as the pattern of our fate, also, that feminine aspect. So perhaps specifically the scaffolding, since it can be equated symbolically with dark matter, perhaps we're talking about this feminine aspect. And it seems that they are identifying it very much with Hiranyagarbha. Since they say Hiranyagarbha is the dream consciousness, which we would call the unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
So it highlights a specific aspect of the unconscious when they speak of Hiranyagarbha.
How could we sum up the relevance of that to the picture, that that's what's releasing the fire? The fire, I think the fire would be his passionate involvement in life. Would you agree with that?
Well, if we tie it together with the ideas he's been studying, that fire can destroy even gods. And a sacrifice has to be made so that fire is not destructive totally, or so that it furthers life.
Mm-hmm.
And that sacrifice in the Hindu text has to do with milk. And back in Dorn, I think he calls, how is it he talks about milk? It's the divine principle in the feminine.
Yeah.
That is milk. So if we pull that symbol of milk into our Western mythology, that's how it's spoken of. It's to do with the divine feminine principle that keeps you from being burned up by that spirit that presents itself to you first as sun only.
That makes sense. So, bring it back to the text, I think we could we say that I think this next chapter, opening the egg, is one of the most important. So I'm seeing this as setting the stage for what we will be doing. It looks like Jung has discovered an answer, but really he's discovered a question. So this next chapter will be taking what we have seen up to now and answering the questions that are implied in it. And it sounds like, in light of this picture and what Carol said, that one of the questions is, what's the relationship between that fire and milk so that the fire doesn't destroy us? So he's going to pick apart elements in that fire. The fire here looks like one thing, But in fact, it's made up of many different components. And that's what he's going to start scrutinizing, is those different components. There's an evil component to it. There's a life-giving component to it. There's an inner component to it. There's an outer component to it. I'm trying to put what we've just said in line of where we've been and where we're going. And it's a process in which those various components play different roles at different points in the process. And what we'll start with next time, I found this section very, very difficult. And I don't pretend to say I've solved it. But one of the things that helped me was to go through Jung's and von Franz's schema of the coming to consciousness of the self through number symbolism, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So we'll start with that. So we're dealing with a process, and I think if we understand the process has different stages and different components, it will help us to see at what stage does which component play what role. I think that will help bring coherence. What I imagine is, again, this is just bleh, it's just coming out of Jung, and then he went back and saw, how do I reconcile all the contradictory things I've just said? And what he realized, I am suggesting, is, oh, I've just described a process with different parts, and different parts play different roles at different stages in the process. So I'm going to try to take this next chapter as a metaphor of the coming to consciousness of the self through various vicissitudes and through various components. And then we'll start off with that. So I think what you have said is a good transition to taking that fire now and examining it more closely.
Yeah. In the West, I think it's in Dorn, the fire is in the milk. The creative principle, the fire is in the milk.
In the milk. Oh, in the milk.
And I make that milk reference because that's what they talk about in the Hindu text.
Yeah, because see, if the fire is just fire, then that's Gilgamesh as the sun. But we are looking for another type of fire that warms as much as it burns.
Yes, and that would be the milk aspect.
And to get to that, this self-impetuosity must be honored in all its facets. That's how I understand it. You're free to come up with your own interpretation. I do not claim I am right. I just racked my brains, and I thought, maybe this is the... We need a larger perspective so we can see all the different elements of this next chapter. Because what we're coming to now is all the stuff we've gone through, here's the rebirth.
So you're saying perhaps Izdubar's son has this milk aspect.
Or that he's probing deeper into the nature. What is this light that's just been born? And he's seeing it's got a lot of aspects. When you first see it, it seems bright and it seems like a solution. Well, it is a solution for the moment, but it also brings with it a complexity that has to be probe so that its appearance isn't destructive. Like the guy figures he gets out of Mennonite religion, he's elated, see that's the fire, he's elated, and he smashes up his Porsche, almost kills himself. So that fire at one moment seemed to him like a great liberation, I'm rid of that morality and that moralism, and that fire that came was genuine, but the way he lived it out was destructive. So how do you keep the fire without going back to the old moralism? Well, because there's an intrinsic set of stages of that fire's transformation, which we also need to know. So really, quite frankly, now when I see somebody in that state, I say, hey, be careful. You have felt miserable, now you feel great, but don't go doing something you regret in that state of feeling great, because you've forgotten to think. Or you might say feel in the Jungian use of the word feeling. Well, so that's where we'll go next time. Thank you for hanging in there. And have another cookie. I don't think we'll get past the opening. If you want to read hell, you want to go to hell, be my
go to hell, but stop.
But stop. Yeah. Okay.
What is that? Stop the forehead. Thing on dark matter that you saw on TV? Or was it on TV?
It was in it was in Through the Wormhole, called, and the episode was called Beyond the Darkness.
And TBS?
I think it's National Geographic.